Hello and welcome back to The Gilded Thread. I'm Irene O'Brien and this is the second episode of my podcast series in which I'm chatting with my guests about their lives and stories shared with me through their style memories. I wanted to start off by expressing my sincere gratitude to every single one of you that listened to the first episode and sent words of encouragement, gave lovely feedback, shared the podcast with friends, commented online, rated. The love and the response just blew my mind and I'm incredibly chuffed. So thank you. Now, as I said before, some of the people I chat to on this series you'll have heard of in the past and some you will get to know over the course of their episode. Today's guest is very special to me. Anne O'Brien is not only one of the most colourful and lovable individuals I know, she's also my mama. And for that, I'm very grateful. And she is my original style icon. I have many, many memories of spending time in her bedroom, tottering in her heels, trying on her coats and donning layers upon layers of what I assumed to be incredibly rare jewels at the time as she typed away on her word processor in the downstairs office. And so we discuss how being a working mom influenced her style, and she recalls her early fashion memories growing up in Roscommon, no platform like Mass to show off the new threads, and tells how formative her teenage years living in Poole and Dorset were not only on her style, but also on her character. Now, of course, I'd heard snippets of some of these stories before, but to sit down one-on-one and indulge in asking questions with no interruptions was such a treat, and the result was a conversation that I just utterly adored. And I hope that, although she's not your mama, well, unless you're one of my siblings, you will equally enjoy her wonderful style memories and the engaging way in which she shares them. So, Mom, Anne O'Brien, thank you very much for being in my podcast. And the idea of this podcast is learning about the different people that come to chat with me through the memories of their clothes and their style and their sartorial history, if you will. Yes. And I suppose so many of my earliest fashion memories are around you, be it what you wore or be it what was hanging in your wardrobe when I was up having a little peek around. You know, I just remember being fascinated by so many pieces of your clothing, particularly this one pair of boots that I really loved, which were, they were like knee boots, but slouchy knee boots. Do you remember them? They were kind of grey. Do you remember?
Yes, I know. That was the early 80s.
Early 80s, yeah.
Yeah. And they were all the go at the time. And they were expensive. When I think back now, stuff was an awful lot more expensive. When I was a young girl, I thought pleated skirts should and would never go out of fashion. I thought they were the most beautiful things. I still like pleats.
Yeah, well, actually, I remember talking about that time with the boots because I'd put them on and sure they'd be up like to my plondies. But I do remember that you had kind of longer pleated skirts at that time that you were wore with those boots. So it was definitely that late 70s, early 80s style to it.
Yes, there was. And at that time too, there was the bow blouses.
The pussy bow blouses.
Blouses, yeah. But I'll tell you, I think Margaret Thatcher put everyone off those blouses.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
Because she kind of overdid them. And it was associated with a very stiff, almost curly hairstyle and steely personality. However, do you know, the pussy bow blouse was a great standby and it really flattered people. And it was terrific inside a suit.
I wanted to go back a little bit, I suppose, when I'm talking about my earliest fashion memories being from kind of snooping around your wardrobe or watching what you were wearing. Because, of course, you were going out to work as well, but we'll come back to that. I really wanted to find out what, I suppose, what your earliest fashion memories are or what your memories of childhood dressing are.
My mum was fashion conscious, even though she was, we were reared in the country, in the middle of the country, and there was very little money. But Mum had been a hairdresser in Grafton Street, and she always had an eye for fashion. And God love her, she loved to lay her hands on magazines. And she talked about film stars and actresses who were kind of losing their momentum when we were growing up. But she always knew what suited us. And we used to have the loveliest little dresses. But back then, as with an awful lot of Irish families, parcels came from America, from cousins, kind uncles and aunts. And because there were nine of us in it, they always fitted someone. So after a parcel would arrive, we were the height of fashion. You know, the little dresses that are going now, and some of them are expensive, some of them are relatively inexpensive, they haven't changed. A little waisted dress and a gathered or drindle skirt and Peter Pan collar on a child always looks so pretty.
Oh, it does. And yeah. This overgrown child loves those styles.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
When those packages were arriving, tell me how that would happen and what your memories of that time are.
Oh, there was great excitement, because sometimes if it was fine weather and if the parcel wasn't too heavy, the postman would put it on the front of his bike and cycle with it. But it depended on his mood. And if it was wet weather, or if the parcel was too big, or if the postman was in what we used to call a fowler, we were told that there was a parcel at the post office. And this brought great joy. And we thought Dad would never come in quick enough from the field to drive in and get the parcel. And of course, I will never realise how close the war had been, really. And everything was so scarce. But my father would get the prong of a fork or his penknife and carefully undo the twine, the strong twine, because nothing was wasted. Well, we'd be handing him knives and sharp scissors and everything we could think of to get it open as quickly as possible. And then we were flying. As we were getting older, we wouldn't be stripping off in front of the brothers. So we'd be grabbing stuff and running into the corridor or running into the back bedroom, trying it on, saying, "This is mine, this is mine. That's too small for you. No, that fits me. No, that's perfect on me." I always remember one summer. I think it was the longest, hottest summer I can ever remember. But a raincoat came. And it fitted me, and it had one of those matching coat, a kind of, what do they call it, hats that has the back longer than the front.
Oh yeah, I don't know what that's called.
Yeah, well, it's a proper raincoat.
And but the hat is separate but matching.
It was separate but matching, and it was bright shiny yellow, and it had two pockets, and it had those big clips across the front of them. Well, I thought the rain would never come. And now I was living in the west of Ireland where there was a lot of rain. But I waited and I waited and I waited. And by the time the rain came, I think I had grown 2 inches and the coat had gone a bit short on me. But I thought I was the biz walking to school in that outfit.
Just dying for the rain.
Dying for the rain. And as I say, it just would not rain for once. And actually, it was one of these rain hats that had a drip facility down the back piece of the helmet or the panel was longer. But I thought that should have gone to the front because it lent more style to it. And when someone roughly pulled it off my head and pushed it round the other way, I didn't admire them. I thought they were ignorant. Had they no sense of style?
So did you stand out in the proper rain showers with it and put it to the test?
Oh yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
And when the packages arrived, how would you decide who got what? Was it based on just who would fit?
Who would fit? And sometimes my mother would make certain decisions because Catherine and I were very close in age and we were very close in size. So to keep the peace and in fairness, there might be a red cardigan and it would fit me, but maybe I had already got one. So my poor mother would kindly say, "That had matched the little dress with the red spots on you, Catherine." But it was just like a shopping spree.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I know that feeling even when you know, my elder sister would have given me something, or sometimes actually the neighbours dropped down a bag of something when we were younger, and the excitement, but I couldn't wait to be seen in it. Mm. Like, did you have that feeling? Did people know that it had come from America, of all places? Because, of course, there's so much weight when something comes from America about it being otherworldly almost.
Yes, there was a lot of excitement. And I remember one Sunday, all of us going to Mass, and my little brother Billy, he was a beautiful looking child with very blonde hair, and he had a zipped up red Gansey with some white stripes up around the shoulders, and it was a really classy little piece. But all of us were going up the church in new clothes, absolutely beautiful stuff. And I'd say they were nudging each other saying, oh, they definitely got a parcel.
Well, was that the place to be seen then?
Yes.
In your new clothes?
Oh, going to Mass. And, you know, there was a bit of pressure when we got older, and when we were away working, we were expected to come home in nice outfits. There was a bit of pride in that. It was a measure of your success, of how well you were doing.
To come back in new outfits.
Yes.
From your mom's point of view, she would want to see you in something.
Yes. And from my grandmother, I had a proud grandmother. And from generally, it was accepted that your sartorial disposition was a measure of your success.
And was it, insofar as when you went, were you open to a whole new world of style over there? Was it very different to what you had grown up in?
Well, it coincided with my starting to work and have some money of my own. And strangely enough, there were two things I always liked: feminine, pretty dresses and well-tailored clothes. And with a trouser suit to this day, I think it should be well tailored. It makes the garment. It just gives that sense of style about it. But I did have some lovely clothes when I started working. And I would send them to my sisters, to my younger sisters as they came up. And it was expected, really, because I was from a large family. So the older ones looked after the younger ones. I remember in particular, my next sister down was going for an interview, and I sent the coat, and would you believe, Irene, the hat.
Oh, really?
Because you went into an interview with either a suit and hat or a coat and hat on you. That was what you did. That's what was expected. And when I was 16, when I was dressing up, I wore a hat. It wasn't long after that since they started to fade out to some extent, except for something more dressy or elegant. But I did have some lovely stuff and I did enjoy wearing it.
When you first went away, you were only 14.
No, I was 15.
Oh, 15. Mm-hmm. Well, weren't you grown up enough to be going? So it was Poole in Dorset.
Yes.
And you went over to really to care for an aunt, as you say.
An aunt. And she called herself an aunt. She was very grand. She was lovely. You know, I look back and I think it was the most formative time of my life. I went to a town where I didn't know anyone, but I made friends there that I have to this day. And that's not today or yesterday, Irene. It was absolutely embracing, and it was such an engaging lifestyle. I was energised. I enjoyed the anonymity.
Well, of course, yeah, because you came from somewhere everyone knew you. And even, I suppose, in a more localised version, even in your house, it was probably hard to ever be alone or do your own thing because everyone was involved. But then in your community, everyone would have known who you were and what family you were from.
Everyone knew us as the Reeds. And we were a very well-established family in the parish for many reasons. But when I went away, yes, I missed my younger brothers and sisters desperately. I mean, Tony was only a toddler and Loretta was a lovely little 5-year-old girl just starting school. However, I did enjoy having my own bedroom.
I can imagine.
And I did enjoy making my own way in life.
Poole in Dorset is where Poole, you went to.
Yes, and it is a beautiful part of the world. I was so lucky to start my young life there, along with by Sandbanks, where some of the rich and famous choose to retire. And it was because that's where my uncle and aunt had gone to live.
So I suppose naturally that is where you first became independent, because yeah. in fact you were looking after someone else really in that aunt.
That aunt,
and
yes.
Is there any item of clothing that you associate with that time and with that independence?
There is, and there's a picture of me in it, but it's black and white, which is a pity. It was a turquoise dress, lace with short sleeves and fully lined, and a highish waist, very flattering, very lovely. And, you know, the designs of the last year and a half have been very, very similar. It was an absolutely magnificent dress. And I had two great outings at the time. One was the Christmas party.
Was this a work Christmas party?
A work Christmas party.
Were you still only 15 at this stage?
No. I was 16 when I was working. Yeah.
So sorry, just to clarify, when you went to Poole in Dorset, it was to look after this aunt, but you did go to school for a short time.
I went to school, yeah, and I made pals there. And it was a lovely time in my life. We were coming up to kind of finishing school. I think my parents always thought that maybe my aunt might have sent me on to third level at that. But it didn't happen, and it didn't happen for many of the girls with whom I was at school. But we were all going for interviews around the same time, all deciding what we were going to wear. It was a big thing. And then would it be okay to wear the same thing out that night? No. The blouse and skirt might be too formal. Did we have a dress instead? And around that time,
which was
the mid-60s, bikinis came into their own.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, we were awfully wild.
Were you wearing bikinis in Poole?
No, not then. I did, though, when I came back to Ireland at 17 or 18 or 19.
But where were you wearing the bikinis?
Oh, I was wearing a bikini. Yeah. I wore a bikini, a green and brown striped bikini, a few times. And actually, that's what I was wearing when I was with your dad on Curraghlow Beach with a gang of friends, having a great old day and a bit of romancing and a bit of carry on. And your granddad, Michael O'Brien, came along to tell us to come early for our tea, that Nana had it ready. Well, firstly, I was in a bloody bikini and your father was drinking a beer, both of which would not have gone down too well.
No.
With neither your granddad or your grandma.
Were you quite new to that relationship at that stage?
Well, the relationship was always new because we didn't go out very long until we were engaged, and then we
But
got
were
married.
You engaged at that stage?
No.
Oh. Hussy, Mom.
I know, hussy is right. Oh my God, I thought your dad was joking when he said, "That's my father." Well, I was trying to throw sand over myself to cover myself up.
Were all the other girls in bikinis?
No, Pauline was in a full piece swimsuit, a full swimsuit, and Catherine, my sister, was as well.
So, was this an example of some kind of daring styles that you would have brought from England?
Yes, I think so. I did like to do what was up to the minute. I remember once in particular, I did a modelling course here in Dublin. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder once, and really it was to get you in to pay their fees, but they told me that I was perfect for modelling. I got flip all out of it. But for the final exam, we were to wear a coat and a hat, and I got this beautiful brown swagger coat with pockets and slanty pockets on the side, and it had a lovely fur collar right up to my neck. It was a beautiful coat, and I'm sorry that I've no pictures of that. And that apparently made quite a rattle in Lachlan Church.
There was chat about it, and that came from Poole.
No, that came, I was in Dublin at that stage, but I had the eye for nice clothes and what suited me at that time. Believe it or not, I was considered tall.
I think you're tall, Mum. Well, in comparison to me.
Yeah.
Bringing you back to that dress you spoke about in Poole, where did the turquoise dress come from?
It came from a shop called Page in the High Street in Poole. And they knew me. I was a regular there. They knew me well, and the hairdresser next door knew me. And I suppose my accent was different, but they were so lovely to me always. And the girl in the shop would know if I was in with the hairdresser and would know what time I had the appointment and then come in and try on the dress. And oh, it was a great time in my life. It was fabulous. I felt quite self-indulgent in those years.
And yet, I'm sure you were sending things home, money home and clothes home and everything.
Yes, of course I was, yeah.
So how great, though, to be able to show that support to your family and still come into your own in that way.
Yeah, I came into my own, and I always feel it made me strong because I really was on my own to a great extent. And the lady, the aunt with whom I was staying, became a bit confused. Batty was the word she was described, the poor thing. But she was... I was good to her. I was kind to her because I was used to looking after my granny. And I remember doing the old lady's hair, auntie's hair. And I put in the waves and all the rest of it. And she was delighted. And she hugged me and said, I was a darling little girl. And the next day when I came in, she said, you never admired my hair. I got it done up by the hairdressers up the road, up at the corner. I've been going for years. It was 3 and 6 pence. And I gave her 6 pence for herself.
And you probably didn't get the 6 pence for yourself.
I couldn't believe it. I was kind of disappointed because I got such kudos for it the day before.
Yeah, it would have been worse though if she said, I just got this dodgy job done down at the local hairdressers. The turquoise dress, you said you had two great outings.
Yeah, one was the staff do. And I had a great time. And I really had a lot of people asking me to dance, even my old boss. But there were a good few single lads. And I think I was a little bit mischievous at that time. One of them asked me to join him in a treasure hunt. The company that I worked for was a very big organisation. It was called British Drug Houses, BDH, and it was taken over later by Glaxo Laboratories. But it was a wonderful company and very modern. But they had their own car club, BDH car club, and the cars would have a badge on them, like the AA badges. But they ran treasure hunts. So one of the guys asked me to accompany him. Actually, two of them asked me to accompany them. And I went, said yes to the first guy. I was kind of sorry. But we went on the treasure hunt, and it was driving up around the hills around Wimborne and down around Sandbanks and all around. But we got lost. And we came back to the reception later, and everyone was saying, oh, of course you got lost. But I was so innocent, and that guy was so respectful. We hadn't done anything except got lost and came about 48th and out of 50 in the in the treasure hunt. And I, also at that time, I was going out with a very nice Catholic boy called David. David was very bright. And he ticked all the boxes, but he didn't kind of set me on fire. Anyway, in the meantime, Sound of Music had just come out, and a lad from work had asked me to go to Sound of Music because I wouldn't go on the treasure hunt with him. So I went to Sound of Music in the cinema in the main street in Poole, and we had a grand time. Actually, around that time, I had another yellow raincoat, but this time it was grown up. Anyway, I went to the Sound of Music with them, and it was grand, and it was lovely, and we didn't get up to much devilment, and we were very innocent, really. But my regular, nice Catholic boyfriend surprised me with tickets to go to Sound of Music on the Saturday night, and I had to pretend I hadn't seen it.
What day had you gone with the first fella?
On the Wednesday. Oh, and just as they had escaped from the convent. Do you remember the nuns had them escaped? And I was just about to say to him, it's not over yet. Wait till you see what's coming. I had to shut my mouth.
Would that have been very frowned upon?
Yeah, and someone saw that guy, the guy on the Wednesday night, I think someone saw him holding my hand and mentioned it to me. And
Mum, you probably left Poole with a reputation.
No, I didn't really. You know, all those years ago, people didn't get up to much, you know, an odd snog now and again. But two timing was a bit frowned upon.
Right, okay.
But jeepers, I was having a great time.
Oh, well, I can imagine. Where was the second place you wore that dress?
The second place was my friend Shirley's engagement party. And it was a fabulous do. And somebody lent me a beautiful white fur stole to go over it. It was a magnificent outfit. I'm so sorry that I don't have pictures from then. It was my friend's engagement party, and it was also her parents' 30th wedding anniversary. And they booked the whole of the hotel in Poole. And there were all sorts of family members there, all sorts of business people, because that man was a businessman. And Shirley, my friend, was there with her fellow. And I had an amazing time. And there's one thing that I could do that many of my friends in Poole couldn't do. I could waltz.
Oh, okay.
I could waltz. And I was able to waltz with some of the older geezers. And they were quite impressed. And there were excuse me's from people's husbands, when I think of it now. But yeah, I could waltz. And there was a dance out at the time called the Leienka. But one thing about rural Ireland, they were always ahead of themselves with dances.
And because that's how you socialised.
Yeah, that's exactly how we socialised. And I was good, yeah. I was up to the minute with the dancing. But that night I was swirling. It was a magnificent occasion. And a great meal. It was really a banquet.
And do you, when you picture that night, do you picture that dress?
Oh, I do. I picture that dress so much. And the high heels. I went to a lot of trouble getting shoes. I couldn't get them quite the colour, but the bow on the front of them was the perfect colour.
Did you add the bow?
No. It took a lot of footwork to find the right shoes. But you know, I was so footloose and fancy free. I didn't have anyone to report to or to worry about or to say, where are you going? I loved that freedom and that anonymity.
Well, it sounds like you flourished.
I did, really. And I found it very hard to settle in Dublin when I came back to Dublin.
When you came back, you moved straight to Dublin.
Yes.
But you must have been visiting Roscommon regularly.
Oh, I went home for 3 weeks holidays and I came back up then. My sister Connie was getting married and the old lady had moved into a nursing home, a home for the bewildered godlover. And so it kind of timed itself out.
And when you reflect on that time, what's your biggest takeaway from it? I mean, you light up when you speak about it.
Oh, like, and so many people kept in touch with me. But to this day, Irene, and we have been back several times to Poole, to this day, when I see the signpost for Poole, I get excited.
Isn't that incredible?
It's just a great time in my life.
Because considering, you know, really you were sent in the kindest way, yes, that you were.
Yeah.
And it could have been, and I imagine it was, daunting, and it could have been incredibly lonely. But to feel like you really, it was so formative for you.
Well, I've been blessed with one thing in life, and that is positivity. And so many times in my life, I have said, I'm making the most of this. And I still do. You know, there are times when things are challenging and I say to myself, there is a reason. And I do embrace it. And, you know, to get away, I hadn't been on a plane before. Mm. And that was new, too. And the whole, I had never seen a dual carriageway until I went to England.
Wow. So did you know at the time, did you say to yourself, this is an adventure?
Yes, I did. I did. And I said, I'm going to love this.
When you came back with your new style and your new fashion discoveries, were there any new ideas you brought that were innovative fashion-wise or that were really cutting-edge fashion-wise?
Yeah, there was. And one of the things that I had the ability to do, and I did quite a bit, was I made dresses. But the drop-waist dress was all the go. And I had three of them. I had one bright red with a white collar on it. And I had another one which was purple. And I put a little taffeta slip underneath it. That was cutting edge, all right. The thing that I found was the taffeta snagged my beautiful
tights.
And tights were only new at that stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, they snagged it. So I realised that I had to go back to the sewing machine and put some bias binding all along the bottom of the taffeta skirt. But it was exactly the same colour bias binding as the purple dress.
And that was quite tenacious.
Well. Yes. Yeah.
And those dresses then, sometimes then your sisters, that would be the first time they were seeing that style.
Yeah.
But were you learning that style from what was available on the high street, which certainly hadn't come to Ireland at that stage? Or did you have access to different magazines and movies over there?
I had a lot. I was at all the movies and I did know what was happening very much, because I remember a gang of us hiring a coach and going to, what's that great big park in London where they have all the
Hyde
concerts?
Park?
Yes. I don't know if it was Hyde Park or not, but Adam Faith and Cliff Richard and the Rolling Stones and Lulu and Cilla Black and all those people were performing. Now, it was awfully expensive. It was nearly a week's wages between the hire of the bus, your meal and the show. But by gum, was it fantastic.
Did you go with a gang?
A gang, yeah. And it was great. It was absolutely fantastic.
And it was outdoor?
It was a stadium. Really?
Was it Wembley? No.
Yes, it was. It was Wembley Stadium. That's
okay.
Where it was.
So Wembley Stadium. So was there great thinking and planning and your outfit? Was that
Yeah. And somebody said that we should wear jackets rather than coats. But actually, I wore a coat. It was lovely. A check coat. And I was glad of it because it was actually quite cold. And I had a cap, kind of a, what would you say? It was quite a trendy Scottish looking hat with a tassel in the middle of it, green and...
Like a beret?
It was more than a beret. It was actually a lovely thing. I often wondered where it went. I think I mislaid it somewhere along the way. And it had a little band underneath it that stood out. It was beautifully made. Absolutely lovely.
So when you came back here... you also had an older sister that was living in Sligo. So tell me about your older sister sending you pieces of clothing that you didn't have access to when you were still living at home.
Yeah, she was very, very good. Connie looked after every one of us at various times. But I remember a pair of high-heeled shoes she sent me. They were magnificent. They were absolutely really for good wear. They were very high and I just loved them. And
what age were you when you got them?
I'd say it wasn't long before I went away, so I was about 15. Yeah.
And 15 wearing your high, like stilettos?
Yeah, yeah, I did. Yeah, it was.
Oh, what did your mom think of them?
She thought I was quite grown up, but we were grown up then. I don't remember much talk about us being teenagers. I remember us looking to get work, get through school and get jobs and get work. And, you know, people had heavy senses of responsibility, not that pleasurable. They were dutiful. People took responsibility for their lives very much at a young age.
So when Connie had gone off, that was her taking responsibility at a young age, I suppose. But then thinking again of the family back here.
Yeah.
So she sent you these shoes. Did you know they were coming?
Yes, she did. She told me that they were coming.
Was there an occasion?
I needed them. She was home at the weekend and she knew I needed them. And I had started going to dances, so I definitely needed them.
And tell me about when you first put them on and first walked in them.
Oh, no bother to me at all. Ah, there was nothing wrong with that. There was nothing going to deter me, not at all.
No, and to this day,
yes.
I think you're still pretty skilled in the old stiletto walk.
Yeah, I enjoy a high heel. It gives me confidence. It makes me feel tall. It pulls in my tummy. It empowers me. And it always did.
And do you remember your first outing in them?
I do. It was to a dance, actually. No, it was to mass earlier that day, and then a dance on the Sunday evening. Yeah.
So you wore the proper stilettos.
Yes.
At 14 years of age, or 15.
Yeah.
To mass.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, did you turn some heads?
No, there were a lot of people getting into the stilettos at that stage. In fact, there were regular signs at doors, particularly in the convent chapel, to say, please do not wear stilettos on our tiled floors or on our parquet flooring. However, I want to explain to you, Irene, the tips used to come off stilettos.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a spike. And floors got ruined with spikes.
That still happens.
Yeah. But it was an awful nuisance. And then you had to cycle into town to go to the
cobbler
or the shoemaker, as we used to call them, and get the tips put on. And some cobblers were better than others at doing a nice, neat job, because sometimes you could come out and the tip would be a bit too wide for the stiletto.
Your balance would be affected.
Not so good.
But now, see, when I think of stilettos, I associate them with kind of a really sexy look and the way it makes you move.
No, they were the dress-up shoe and the going-out shoe in those days.
Mm.
You know, or you had school shoes laced up.
Okay, so either or.
Yeah, it was either or, you know.
Tell me about, so when you were going to those dances, when you had come back from pool and you were going to those dances, were you wearing a lot of the pieces that you had either made or brought with
yes.
you?
Yeah.
Or at this stage, were you buying from Dublin?
Well, I had to buy from Dublin because things got worn out, of course, and you needed to replenish things. But I found Dublin a lot more expensive. I found myself quite challenged in Dublin. I wasn't able to help out as much at home, because when I lived in Poole, I lived rent free.
Of course, yeah.
So I helped out at home and the rest was mine.
Mm.
And it was just fabulous.
Mm.
Like, I remember sending parcels home. I remember sending a jumper to my dad for his birthday. And there's a famous story that he went into this house where there was a newly married woman and she was very posh and she had a beautiful poodle. And the husband told the story afterwards that she was cuddling this beautiful white little poodle. And then she said, George, would you like to hold my little baby? And Daddy said, all right, well, of course, I'll grow you in. And didn't the poodle pull a thread in the jumper?
Oh, the jumper you just sent.
And apparently the husband told afterwards that Daddy jumped up and down and said, that's the jumper the poor girlie sent me over from England.
Ah, well, he probably loved wearing that.
Yeah.
I didn't know there'd be too many poodles rocking around Roscommon at that time.
Yeah, we were were quite sophisticated. That was about the only one in the parish, I'd say.
Everyone probably remembers that poodle.
She came from away. She married into the farm and they were quite well off.
Yeah.
So she was allowed her pet. I wouldn't say it was chasing sheep down the... or working with the sheep. It wasn't a farm animal.
Yeah. Who were you looking to as... Who was your style icon when you were
growing
up?
Well, the Shrimp came out at that time in the 60s, Gene Shrimpton. And, like, there were headlines how the Shrimp turned up at Ascot with the skirt 4 inches above her knees. 4 inches was nothing. They got shorter and shorter.
But that was the start of it.
That was the start of
it. Of the mini.
Yeah, that was the start of the mini. And another thing that happened at that time was that you got frilly knickers for over your tights. When your dress or skirt blew up, you saw these frilly knickers. You'd see them at Wimbledon.
Almost like little knicker shorts.
Yeah.
Almost like what you'd get for a baby now over their nappy.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
I love those.
But there were frills at the back of it. And there was a famous story. I had a beautiful red skirt. It was one of those gored skirts, very short. And we were made say the rosary before we'd go out to the dance at night. Oh, much to our chagrin, we did not enjoy that. But one particular night, I was all ready to go out. And to my utter embarrassment, my friend Eileen Mahon had called because Daddy was giving us a lift. When I think that he was a patient man, he'd bring everyone that would fit in the car. Anyway, we're kneeling down and we...
And she was made.
She was the done thing that she knelt down as well. And you put your elbows on the chair. And I think the red skirt must have shifted up. And the white frilly pants was exposed. And just glory be to the Father and Son. Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, will you go in and get a skirt on your girl?
And did he make you get changed?
He did. Wink, wink. Sure, I put on my coat and I didn't know what I was wearing, you know.
When you were coming back in, when you were wearing high heels and you were wearing shorter skirts and you were wearing these new styles, was there ever any question that, you know, you needed to tone it down a little bit?
My father thought I should tone it down a little bit. My mother was quite the gal and used to say, well, you have good legs. Why don't you show them off?
I see, I love that. Mm-hmm. And you do. Yeah. You still have good legs, Mum. And tell me a little bit about then when you were in Dublin, you had started working. What was your style like at this stage? Had it evolved since Poole?
It had evolved a bit. Around that time, the patterned tights came in.
Oh, yeah.
And there used to be advertisements with girls on swings and all different patterns along. They were absolutely the biz. A lot of them were black, but all different patterns. Nothing had ever been seen like those before, because you went from tights, plain, you went from silk stockings to nylons to plain tights. And that was a big thing. And there was a big thing with the miniskirt. When I was with Stevenson Gibney, Art got me a suit. It had white trousers. It was khaki. And it had a belted khaki dress with two pockets on the chest and two pockets under the belt. And it was the biz.
It sounds fabulous. I would love that.
Absolutely amazing. And I remember we had a priest client at the time. And he came in one day and asked me, did I catch the lion? And all the boys in the office were laughing about this. But that outfit I had for so long, and it was absolutely beautiful. But do you know something, Irene? Sometimes I wore it without the trousers.
And yeah, I'd well believe
short.
It.
It was very short, but it looked terrific.
I want you to like draw that for me, because I want to remake it. Do you have any photos of it?
I don't know.
That sounds fabulous.
It was absolutely superb.
When you were with Dad, I'm not sure when this was, there's an outfit that he bought for you, a yellow tunic, with lace overlay.
White lace overlay.
White lace overlay. And how would you describe the trousers?
They were bell-bottom.
But short, cropped bell-bottom.
They weren't cropped. People didn't wear very long ones then.
Yeah, but today we would consider them cropped.
Yeah.
Today we would consider them cropped. You still have this outfit, and I absolutely adore it. Mm-hmm. And I wore it one time as fancy dress. I went, didn't know what to go as, so I put that on and a blonde wig and went as mom. And I've never gotten so many compliments on an outfit and so many questions about it. And I love that you still have that, because so many things I'll say to you, why don't you still have that? Where was it? And you say, sure, we wore it. You wore your clothes then until it was threadbare.
You did wear them until it was threadbare, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this was a gift from him.
Yeah.
And had you seen this one? You chose this with him?
No, he saw we had seen it.
Where?
In some shop along Georgia Street. And I can't remember what shop. But we had seen it, but I thought that I was newly pregnant and I thought it'd be an awful expense to buy it if I was going to be expanding. However, he bought it and I wore it and I got the Christmas parties out of it that year.
And was it a showstopper?
It was
of the time, but to me, that seems like a showstopper.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was. Actually, in those years, we used to go to a lot of Christmas do's because there was no restrictions on drink driving or anything like that. We used to have his office do, the General ESB do. Wherever I was working, there'd be a staff do. He was involved with the unions, he was involved with boxing, he was involved with the credit union, and they all had, everybody, every grouping had a Christmas outfit. And you always had to
had
have
a Christmas outing.
And you always had to have something good to wear to those things.
So I love this story because it's a beautiful tunic and the beautiful trousers, and you wore it as an outfit and got so many outings. And then you wore it to Rosslare Harbour, where Dad is from. But this time you wore it just the tunic as a dress. Mm-hmm. How did that go?
I remember Grandad saying, oh gosh, Anne, that's a bit short.
And were you mortified?
No, I was not.
Were you married at that stage?
No, I'd say we were engaged.
Well, he'd seen you in your bikini at this stage.
I know. But there was another time I had a beautiful dress. It had a nautical feature. It had gold buttons down the front and little navy pockets. They used to call it a button through dress. And it had a lovely navy and white collar and a little navy and white pocket tops that nearly were like little epaulettes. It was a lovely thing. And I had a navy hat, a straw hat, and it was gorgeous. And apparently Sarah was sitting in the car with
my
her
dad's
parents.
Sister.
Yeah, they
my
were
auntie.
Sitting in the cars in the car outside the church in Rosslare Harbour, in Kilran actually. And we were talking to some people, some friends of ours and that. And when I came to the car, Sarah said, because she was a bold teenager, Dad was just saying that you're a grand looking girl. It's a pity you wouldn't wear your clothes a bit longer.
Oh, Mom, yeah. I would be mortified if my father-in-law said that.
I didn't care at all. They were always very nice to me. They were always lovely to me.
And when you got engaged and went on to get married, what outfits can you remember? What was your style like around that time?
That was winter time. But I do have a memory, a great memory of buying stuff coming up to my wedding. And I had a beautiful navy tailored raincoat with white stitching on it, and it was the biz. It was like a spring coat, showerproof. It was lovely. But the going away outfit, because it was a pink dress with a flared skirt and white spots rather than dots, and it had a pink slip.
And
I had pink shoes and a big pink rimmed straw hat, which was gorgeous. And when I came down, in those days, people changed out of their wedding outfits and got into their going away outfits.
Yeah.
And when we went back into the ballroom where the dancing was going on, the band struck up Lily the Pink.
It's an amazing outfit. And we have footage of that, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So the hat, it was wide rimmed. And then almost you had made it into a bonnet because it was
There was chiffon that came down around it and tied under the chin.
Yeah, yeah, it was amazing. Gorgeous. Do you still have that dress?
No, darling, I wore that and wore it. When you were all small, I didn't have money to buy clothes, so I wore whatever I had.
Yeah.
You know, and that just got worn.
Are there any outfits that you associate with your family and the progression there and having children?
Yeah. Well, there was one dress I bought when I was expecting Stephen, and I bought it for the christening. It was midi length, and it was a very fine cord, almost velvet, but not. And it had a stand-up collar. It was moss green with little pink and white flowers on it. It was amazing. And it had a stand-up collar and ruffles down the front in the colours of the little flowers. And I got an awful lot of wear out of that.
You bought that when you were pregnant with him?
Yeah, I was with Sarah.
But then we're able to wear it.
I bought it for the christening. And it was lovely. It was absolutely lovely. I really, really enjoyed wearing it.
And I think, when I think about the clothes you wore when we were growing up, like I remember, you know, we went to school nearby and all the moms were really into tennis and they'd drop off the kids in their tracksuits and then they'd go and play tennis. But you were working and I don't really remember that many other working moms. So your style, you were very put together in that way because when you'd be going off to work. So how much of being a working woman at that time, but also a mom of young children, how did that affect your style?
It affected me in that I bought for work rather than for leisure. I had some lovely linen suits with nice jackets and inverted pleats in the front and things like that. We had an innings into Ken David dresses. People knew, friends of ours knew the people who owned it, and if we went in on a Friday morning, we got stuff considerably reduced, and I used to keep very nice stuff in my wardrobe, and actually people used to borrow from me. But talking about not working, I didn't take full-time jobs. I used to take temporary jobs, and sometimes they would go on. I might take a temporary job for 2 weeks, but it might go on for 3 months, and I used to try and get off at 3 o'clock or 2:30 to be home when the children would be coming home. But talking about it being unusual, I got quite a bit of stick from really my very best friends for working.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I did. I don't know why, but I got criticism, and I liked to work. I found it fulfilling, and I liked to have to contribute as well. To we had 5 children and 1 car and a big mortgage, and it was nice to be able to have some cash flow.
And you were working from the time you were 15.
I was, yes.
It was natural to me.
Yeah. And I used to get fed up just doing housework. I know that's awful, but it's the way it was. But yeah, I got a lot of flack and a lot of...
And would they say it in a snide way, or would they sit you down and say...
No, they both. And then I'd hear it back from each other and that sort of thing. Yeah, it was tough. I didn't enjoy that. And I used to be saddened by it.
Well, of course you would be.
But I liked doing it. And I wasn't, while I was saddened, it was because they were my friends. But I still liked to work and I wasn't put off by it.
Hmm.
I didn't mind being a bit different.
No. You wouldn't want to, Mum. But work is still so important to you to this day.
Yes, I like to work.
And what was it about, besides the practical things that you've just listed there, what did it do for you going to work?
Well, I'll tell you, and you mentioned this already, I started working young. I got a lot of experience, and I think that I was probably a lot more experienced at 20 or 21 than a lot of school leavers. And for that reason, I always felt I was kind of capable. I liked work. It was fulfilling. But I got very interesting assignments. I mean, I used to take the minutes for meetings, high-level meetings in the Burlington Hotel. And they were of such a confidential nature. And I'd be bringing the notes here and typing them in the house. And I got from that, I remember getting asked to take minutes of a meeting one time, and it was top secret. And I couldn't imagine what it was going to be like. I don't know if I've ever told you about this.
No, I don't know.
But it was a businessman of a bizarre nature, with bare chests and black shirts and medallions and big red ruby rings and dyed hair and all the rest of it, and an old senator to whom I was known and for whom I had done some work, sitting in the middle of them. And it took place on down along the quays in what looked like a closed down hotel. And the reason it was top secret was that they were going to start an Irish Top of the Pops.
No way!
Yes, it never came to fruition, but they were the most unlikely characters.
So were they music execs? Is that why they had the shirts? They were music execs
and radio people, and they were talking about TAM ratings, and they were talking about all sorts of things. It was a most unusual little experience. But I had some fabulous experiences work-wise.
But imagine how cool you would have been in the eyes of your children had you known about that Top of the Pops, when that was the programme in this house when we were growing up.
Yeah, it was.
So
Top of the Pops.
Do you feel like work kept you interested in the world around you and
it
interesting?
Did. Aware. It keeps people aware. So I like to keep up with what's happening.
Well, you also always tell me that you love being around people younger than you.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, why is it?
I don't know. They energise me. And I don't feel old.
But Mum, you're not. You'll never be old. It doesn't matter how old you get age-wise, you'll never be old.
I don't know. But when I was young, people my age, I thought they were sad. I thought they were, what did they have to live for?
What do you love about fashion? Because you do love fashion. Or you love clothes and you love style, and you also appreciate it in others.
I do, yeah. I really do, yeah. But I am so much into the feel-good factor. I think you operate with confidence. I type better when I have my makeup on. Yeah. I deliver training better when I feel I'm wearing something beautiful. But, you know, I always say to people, if you get a present of a jumper from your mother, I say this to young fellas, 23 or 24, and it's a good garment, but you don't like it, don't wear it because you won't enjoy wearing it. Either exchange it or give it to your brother.
Mm-hmm.
But do not wear stuff just because it's a duty to wear it.
Yeah. But on the other hand as well, I think, you know, I've been hashtagging wear your bloody clothes for my closet project. Like, I know, and I think I got it from you. We shouldn't save things for good.
No, that's a crazy thing to do. My God, I love being pretty. I love wearing stuff that makes me feel good. That's a cod.
I always think about different pieces of clothing that remind me of people. And I think there's going to be lots of ones that remind me of you. Certainly your wedding dress, because I wore your wedding dress. And I wonder, you know, when you got that wedding dress first, or even when you were caring for it afterwards and packing it away, like, did you ever think you'd see anyone wear it again?
Well, it was always a dream.
Really?
I always had that dream. You know, Irene, it's one of the compliments. It's a compliment that'll stand out in my life.
Ah, that's that you so wore nice, that. Mom. Yeah. Well, I loved wearing it.
I know. I thought that was just so, it made me so happy, and it made that wedding day for me.
Yeah.
And your dad mentioned it, that you looked lovely in your mum's dress. And people said, people of my vintage, men said, was that your dress?
Yeah. No, it was a joy to wear it, and I loved it. And also you allowed me to cut it up a little bit. And modify it to your style. Which I was... Well, actually, I was worried about doing that, and you were the one that said, for God's sake, make it yours. But I still think it was very much the same dress, you know.
It was, of course, yeah.
Well, I've loved our chat, and I've loved hearing. Is there anything else that you know, you think about kind of fashion or style or the evolution of style through your life that you'd like to comment on?
Well, I just hope it keeps changing, and I hope it stays beautiful.
Thank you for sitting down with me and chatting through your life and your looks and your style, giving me your time. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, honey.
And so there you have it. Episode 2 of The Gilded Thread with none other than my mama bear, Anne O'Brien. I have to thank Mom so much for doing this with me. I actually had double the amount of audio recorded because I just lost myself in our chats. So I'll always treasure having these memories on tape. And I just loved learning so much more about my mom as an individual. In fact, podcast or no podcast, I would recommend anyone to sit down for such a chat with close family members that they're lucky enough to have in their lives and to get it on tape if you do have the opportunity. Maybe I will share some of the golden nuggets that didn't make the cut over the coming weeks. And an equally massive thanks to you, the listener. I truly, truly appreciate you choosing to listen to The Gilded Thread. I have been told to ask you to rate and subscribe on iTunes. So if you are that way inclined, please do. But what I really hope is that you will listen again next time when my guest is actress, model, writer, and all-round fabulous human, Olivia Tracy. I had such crack with her, and I'm so looking forward to sharing our chat. Bye for now.